The Voice of Freedom is on the air. This is the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, last night we left off after finishing Chapter 10 of Oklahoma City Day 1 by Michelle Marie Moore and began Chapter 11. Tonight I'm going to finish Chapter 11, and I really don't have a whole lot of material to read. So once I have finished Chapter 11, we're going to open the phones and take your calls. And Michael Cottingham is here in studio. He's not really a guest tonight. He came up to watch how this stuff works so he can begin to set up his own studio at home. But if you would like to call in and talk to Michael Cottingham after we finish Chapter 11 tonight from Oklahoma City Day 1, you're certainly welcome to do that. And Gary Bourgeois, in answer to your question, tonight's broadcast on Quest for Health, immediately following the Hour of the Time, with Michael Cottingham, covers exactly what you're looking for. Milk thistle and liver therapy. And it's as if, you know, everything, all, you know, when you need it, if you're doing the good thing, if you're doing the right thing, God always provides. That's how it's always happened to me. And beginning Monday night at 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 Mountain, 8 Central, and 9 Eastern, Jackie Patru, if we get her tapes in time, will begin her new broadcast, and I don't even know what she's calling it yet, but if you love this country, you're going to love Jackie Patru. So we'll know on Monday. If you tune in and she's not there, you'll know that that I didn't get her tapes in time. And I should get them Monday morning sometime, unless she's going to do the broadcast live, and she may be going to do that. I don't know. Or maybe she'll postpone it another few days. I don't know that either. But anyway, she will be debuting on the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network Monday or sometime shortly thereafter. Jackie, if you're listening, please let me know what's happening, because I've been promoting your broadcast, and I'm not sure at this moment when it's really going to air. But hopefully, The last I heard, it's going to be Monday night, 6 Pacific, 7 Mountain, 8 Central, and 9 Eastern. I guess it's still daylight time. And that's where we'll leave it for now. Don't go away, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be right back to finish Chapter 11, Oklahoma City, Day 1. We left off proving that Bob Ricks lied in his press conference, but I'm going to go back and cover that material again just in case somebody missed it. And it's going to open your eyes. Remember, this is just one little infinitesimal part of this entire 2-pound book. It actually weighs more than 2 pounds. 640 pages. Everything is documented, thoroughly documented, sourced. The volume is indexed. It only covers the first day, April the 19th, 1995, the actual day of the bombing of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building, all the way up to the final rescue of the last survivor. And it does expound upon some of the events into the future that must be carried to some kind of a conclusion rather than leave the reader hanging. There will be two more volumes, both larger than this initial first volume. This is the press conference in Oklahoma City on April 19, 1995. FBI Special Agent in Charge, Bob Ricks. Is speaking, and I quote, President Clinton has declared this a federal emergency. FEMA will be responding, and they had intended to be here by now, but they should be here shortly to assist in the cleanup efforts. The FBI has been designated by President Clinton as the lead federal agency in this investigation. All the agencies, however, in that building have pledged their full cooperation, and, of course, they were the ones most injured. The FBI did not have an office at that federal building, and we did not suffer any casualties. However, many of our fellow law enforcement brothers were injured, and we still do not have a count with regard to the extent of that injury. We have at this time no assumptions with regard to who caused this particular bombing, and we have had hundreds, if not thousands, of leads from individuals calling in to reputed eyewitnesses. Each one of those is treated very seriously, but at this point we cannot speculate with regard to who is responsible. Other than that, I think we have very little else to add to that. We will throw it out to questions. The chief of the police department indicated that we have individuals here that will be glad to respond to any that you might have. Question. We understand there have been at least two suspects the police are looking for in a blue pickup. What can you tell us about them? Ricks. The attorney general came on right before we began this press conference, and I think she's absolutely correct when she indicated that we are not going to discuss individuals at this time. As I indicated earlier, we have hundreds of potential suspects and a number of coincidences that have occurred. However, to say that it's one particular group or one individual, we're not anywhere near making any statement with regard to that. Question. Is there anything in the investigation to indicate who did this or why? Ricks. We have no indication with regard to a group, nor do we have any indication with regard to reasons. So it would be total speculation at this time as to why Oklahoma City was picked out. Question. Is there any link to the two-year anniversary of Waco? Ricks. As the Attorney General indicated, we are not excluding anyone at this time. It is the two-year anniversary, so there is an obvious coincidence that exists. However, there is no indication that there is any reason why this would be the cause of the bombing. Question. Were there any warning signs a week ago, a threat that this might happen? Ricks. The FBI in Oklahoma City has not received any threats to indicate that a bombing was about to take place. Now I'm going to read you the notes. The FBI had also telephoned a warning to the Oklahoma City Fire Department on Friday, April 14, 1995, 5 days before the explosion occurred. This information was confirmed by Oklahoma City Fire Chief Gaines, Assistant Chief Charlie Weathers, and dispatcher Carl Purser. In a press conference on October the 24th, 1995, with Oklahoma Representative Charles Key, the media asked, "You said earlier that the fire department has confirmed that there was a warning about a bomb." Charles Key, "Yes." Media, "Who? What person?" Charles Key, "You can call Chief Gaines, Chief Hansen, Assistant Chief Weathers. I believe a dispatcher named Purser can tell you, and then there were people in the offices there that know about this." Also, Daniel J. Adamidis said, quote, "As I was passing the backside of the county courthouse, I noticed a truck with a trailer, and the truck said bomb disposal. I remember thinking as I passed that, gee, I wonder if they had a bomb threat at the county courthouse." End quote. Dr. Randall Heather testified, quote, "I do know that there had been a threat phoned in to the FBI last week," end quote. Michael Hinton testified, quote, "The federal building had received a bomb threat 1 week prior to that morning of the bomb explosion," end quote. Tony Garrett said, quote, "There had been bomb threats 2 weeks prior to this bomb. The FBI and the ATF knew that these bomb threats were real and they did nothing about it," end quote. John Calhoun said, quote, "The FBI received a bomb threat last week and their offices are on 4 floors of that building," end quote. Norma Smith said, and I quote, "As I walked through my building's parking lot, I remember seeing the bomb squad. There was some talk about the bomb squad among employees in our office. We did wonder what it was doing in our parking lot, end quote. And now back to the press conference with Bob Ricks. Question. What about the Marshals Service memo that warned about the possibility of a bombing, that the federal building could be a target? Ricks. If one such memo existed, I am not familiar with that memo. And now we go to the notes. Again, ladies and gentlemen. Quote, I can't imagine that if the U.S. Marshals had put everybody within their forces on alert like that, that the FBI and the BATF didn't know about it. This alert that I'm referring to was reported at length. There was a memo on this as well, issued by the U.S. Marshals, and it was quoted at length in an article in the Star-Ledger newspaper, end quote. Pat Briley. This from the Star-Ledger, quote, the disclosure was made in a confidential memorandum issued by the U.S. Marshals Service in Washington calling for stepped-up security at federal facilities throughout the nation, end quote. Also from the Star-Ledger, quote, the Marshals Service memo said the agency believes that there is sufficient threat potential to request that a heightened level of security awareness and caution be implemented at all Marshals Service protected facilities nationwide. The memo was issued by Eduardo Gonzalez, director of the U.S. Marshals Service, end quote. And now back to the press conference with Bob Ricks. Question. We had several reports this afternoon that there was possibly another bomb that was located in the building. Can you tell us where that device was located? Ricks. I think it's typical with any such disaster that occurs. Many rumors follow the bombing itself. We were conducting a search when there was a report of another device. Indications are that that was purely a rumor. We never did find another device. We temporarily had to call off the search. After we confirmed that no other device existed, then we resumed the search. And now we go to the notes again. Scanner reports. Quote, all companies on the general alarm be advised there has been another device found in the federal building, clear a four-block area, end quote. Another scanner report. Quote, boy, you're not going to believe this. Believe what? I can't believe it. This is a military bomb, end quote. Eyewitness reports. Quote, the second bomb was actually several bombs, five-gallon-sized, olive-drab-colored canisters, bearing mil-spec numbers and clearly labeled as fulminate of mercury, with a hole in the top of each canister through which a detonator was attached, end quote. In a Relevance interview, Relevance is a magazine by subscription only, a Relevance interview from the issue of May 1995, quote, Oklahoma City Police Department Public Information Officer Bill Martin confirmed sketchy reports that several containers of fulminate of mercury were discovered inside the building, end quote. Dr. Randall Heather, quote, they saw at least three additional bombs taken out in barrels from the third floor by bomb squad personnel. Others reported that explosive devices from the building were removed under blankets on medical stretchers. It was a great stroke of luck that we actually have got diffused bombs. It's through the bomb material that we'll be able to track down who committed this atrocity, end quote. Jack Killeran of the BATF, quote, public safety personnel on the scene think they have found an unexploded device in the building, end quote. Tony Garrett, quote, saw the removal of the bombs when the bomb squad came down to the Mura building and described to me a timing device on one of the bombs. It had been set to go off 10 minutes after the earlier explosions, end quote. KFOR Channel 4 Television reported, quote, the second explosive was found and defused. The third explosive was found, and they are working on it right now as we speak. I understand that both the second and the third explosives were larger than the first, end quote. And now we go back to the press conference with Bob Ricks. Question. So you think it was a car bomb that did it? Ricks, we're not saying it's a car bomb or not. The chief indicated that there is every indicia that it was a car bomb. We have technicians. Our best technicians are coming from around the United States who will do a thorough crime scene analysis. It would be presumptuous of me to try to do a crime scene analysis at this point. We do have a crater that exists outside the federal building, which is about 20 feet in diameter, which of course has all the earmarkings of a car bomb. But until we have our experts in here to examine the crime scene, we are not going to make such a conclusion. And ladies and gentlemen, I want to interject here that that's probably the only piece of truth that Bob Ricks has stated in this entire press conference, was that the crater is approximately 20 feet in diameter. Now I return to the book. Question. We've heard reports that a bomb threat was called into the building this morning. Can you confirm that? Ricks. We are not familiar with any bomb threat. Question. Some heard many explosions. Ricks. We've had reports that there were. Witnesses have indicated they heard two separate explosions. Occasionally, when you have a large explosion of this nature, sometimes you get an echo effect. The sound may reverberate throughout the enclosed downtown area. So we have no real determination with regard to how many devices at this time, so we really can't say until we get the experts in here. And now we go once again to the notes. Dr. Charles Mankin, quote, everybody that has looked at the signal has said a refraction and echo would really be strange because there's absolutely no loss of energy in the recorded seismic signal. The second event has the same amplitude as the first. The arrival time is wrong for a refracted wave. We've ruled out reflections, refractions, and the air blast. We determined that these two records of these two events corroborate our interpretation that there were two explosions, end quote. From scanner reports, quote, we have a large column of smoke to the south of this address. We just heard some loud explosions, end quote. Testimony of Brett Woolley, quote, he reported hearing two very loud staccato-like explosions separated in time by 5 to 8 seconds and followed by a long diminishing rumbling sound like rolling thunder and lower in pitch than the two explosions. Jim Ferguson reported, quote, everyone in town, everybody who was there knows there were two blasts, end quote. P.G. Wilson testified, quote, a second explosion came after the first one, and shards of glass began flying in the office, end quote. Michael Hinton said, quote, about 6 or 7 seconds later, another explosion, which was more violent than the first, pushed the bus again, and I thought the second time the bus was going to turn over, end quote. And now back to the press conference with Bob Ricks. Question. What about other devices in the building? Ricks. There was one item that was found which does not appear to fit in there. It appeared to be a military-type ordnance, but we believe it had probably no relationship to the bombing, and because the building was so destroyed, we cannot account for that device. So instead of saying that there were no other devices, there was an ordnance-type device that was in there, but it does not appear to be related to this incident. Question. What about the rocket launcher? Ricks. We don't know to whom that belonged. Until that is determined, I know that has swept the city, but there was a rocket involved. Again, that's going to be thoroughly examined to determine if it's inert or what that actually is, but at this point, we're not making any statement further. And now we go once again to the notes. KTOK Radio AM 1000 reported the discovery and removal of a rocket launcher from the debris. This announcement originated with a rescue worker on the scene and was relayed to a KTOK reporter near the perimeter. Now back to the press conference with Bob Ricks. Question. Some people are saying the car had ammonium nitrate in it as the explosive substance. Is that correct? Ricks. I don't believe that has been confirmed. It's obviously a very high explosive. Ammonium nitrate could be a possible source. Again, until we get the experts in there and we start taking actual samples and do a thorough analysis, there's no way for us to conclude what it is. And now we go once again to the notes. Department of the Army Field Manual, Explosives and Demolitions, FM 5-25, describes ammonium nitrate as a low explosive used chiefly as a cratering or ditching charge. And now back to the press conference with Bob Ricks. Question: has anyone claimed responsibility? Ricks: we've had numerous calls from various organizations, from individuals to organizations. To say that we've had anyone that we think is the actual entity responsible, we cannot make that conclusion yet. We've had hundreds of calls around the country with regard to this incident. Question: how much expertise would you have to create an explosion of this size? Ricks: I cannot answer that. I would have to speculate. Obviously, it was a highly powerful explosive item that caused this particular incident. Question: from looking at the damage, is there any way to tell how many sticks of dynamite it would have taken to do this damage? Ricks: they can do, obviously. The experts will be here this evening. They will be taking the measurements. They can estimate, looking at the surroundings, how it was contained, and so forth, the exact nature of the explosive device and how much explosive was used. But again, I'm not an explosives expert, and I can't stand up here and say that. Question: how deep is the crater? Ricks: I don't know. It's so full of debris, you can't estimate how deep the crater is. Question: would a device outside the building cause this much damage to the inside of the building? Is that a logical conclusion? Ricks: yes, obviously. If you've seen the pictures of it, it basically sheared off the front of the building, or actually it was the side of the building, so it had to be an extremely powerful explosive that occurred. Not only went up, it went out. And you have debris that is in a multi-block area that was felt over 15 miles away. And that was the end of the press conference. Governor Frank Keating was seen moments later at the bomb site, making statements to the press on a street corner. His comments were almost identical to those he had offered earlier in the afternoon, with the exception of the following two remarks. Said Keating, quote, "The president asked me, when this thing is over, to help him attempt to draft a national response. Because of the law enforcement experience I had as an FBI agent, and certainly as somebody who has supervised most all of the federal law enforcement agencies on the national level, which I'll do," end quote. It would have been interesting to ask if Keating's national response would include those prudent and careful protective measures he had mentioned earlier that day. But the media was not putting jigsaw puzzles of information together at this time. Instead, Cynthia Gunn of KWTV Channel 9 Television asked, "What do you say to the families, Governor?" Keating replied, quote, "It never should have happened. This whole tragic, awful thing should never have happened. The fact that evil people would treat innocent people like this the way they do is just beyond comprehension for those of us who live in the civilized world. Absolutely incredible," end quote. The media representatives at the bomb site interview thanked Governor Keating for his time, and the cameras swept the television audience back into the auditorium of the Civic Center. Reporters were beginning their traditional recaps for the public of all that we had just heard. But behind their statements, television viewers could hear the following announcement being made over the public address system. It laid out for us all the new rules of the road. From now on, everything official was going to be controlled and prepackaged for public consumption, and this was that announcement end. And I quote, "Everybody listen up, please. If you are interested in future information, from this point on, the Federal Bureau of Investigation will be giving you the press releases because they're in charge of the investigation." End quote. Balthasar Gratian and the Art of Worldly Wisdom, written in 1647 and translated by Joseph Jacobs, said this: "One deceit needs many others, and so the whole house is built in the air and must soon come to the ground." And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of chapter 11. Ladies and gentlemen, the gist of all that you heard tonight is that from the very first day, the federal government, from the moment they took control of the press releases and of the information leaving the bomb site, they have been lying to the American people on every single issue. As I stated during the reading of that chapter, the only thing that Bob Rick said that was the truth at that particular time was that the crater was approximately 20 feet in diameter. It's actually between 18 and 20 feet, depending upon how you measure it and who's measuring it. Later, we would hear statements that the crater was 65 feet in diameter and 20 feet deep. And later, they said that they knew nothing about any rocket launcher or rocket, and that none had been found at the scene. There were no other bombs found, no other bombs removed, no other bombs defused. And I could go on and on and on. Why is the FBI lying? Why is the White House lying? Why is the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms lying? Why is Janet Reno lying? Well, for the same reason Hitler lied when he burned the Reichstag, ladies and gentlemen. For exactly the same reason. If you'd like to call in and discuss this or ask any questions about the book or what you've heard last night and tonight, the number is 520-333-4578. Also, if you'd like to talk to Michael Cottingham, if you've been listening to his new program, which follows immediately the hour of the time, he is sitting here and will be happy to take your questions or your comments regarding his broadcast, if you so desire. If you would like to purchase a copy of Oklahoma City Day One by Michelle Moore with a foreword by William Cooper, 640 pages, thoroughly documented, sourced, and indexed. It is encyclopedic in scope. Send $35 postpaid to Harvest, H-A-R-V-E-S-T, Post Office Box 1970, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona 85925. Make sure you make your money order payable to Harvest and send it to Harvest, Post Office Box 1970, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona 85925. Now, there is another edition of this book. Both are first editions, ladies and gentlemen. The second one is a limited to 500 copies only, signed first edition hardcover, and it is just absolutely beautiful. That is $65 postpaid. That's $65 postpaid. We did that simply because so many people who are bibliophiles and book collectors ask us to make a special signed limited edition. And anyone can purchase a copy if they wish. These types of books usually, they always go up in value at some point in the future, especially when they are limited to so few copies. Most limited editions of first edition collector's books, specially bound, are printed in the 2,500 and up numbers. So this is an extremely limited edition as books go, and you may want to get your hands on a copy as an investment. And because of the historical significance and because of the eye-opening, awakening information that is contained inside, $65, make your money orders payable to Harvest, and send it to Harvest, P.O. Box 1970, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. The phones are open now, 520-333-4578, and we'll be happy to take your calls. Michael, why don't you get over there on that microphone. You've got your earphones on. You don't have to get real close because that's a killer microphone. You just have to project your voice a little bit. Welcome to the Hour of the Time.
Oh, thanks, Bill. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I guess you do have to get a little bit closer. Some people don't have loud projecting voices.
Well, I'm kind of used to playing around with my microphone by being right on top of it. So
yeah, that's not good, by the way.
No, you told me that.
You need to strike a happy medium. If you get too close, you get this kind of stuff. And if you get too far away, then you get, you know, your voice level is too low, and you have to find the perfect spot for me is right here. That's it. And you can hear it as I come in. That's it. And as I get closer, you can see it gets distorted.
Yeah, extremely. So, these are nice microphones, by the way.
Oh, right? These are the best. This is, I could never, ever in my life, I wouldn't even know where to get one. Much less come up with the money to pay for it. So Ron donated these, and he was a godsend, and these microphones are godsend because the quality is unbelievable. I can't believe how many letters I began to receive after we began using these microphones, telling us how wonderful the sound had become when they thought it was pretty good before.
Yeah, they looked straight out of a old-time radio broadcast.
Yeah. Well, tell us, you're actually doing your broadcast at home on tape and sending them to me, and then I'm playing them over the network, but you're here to sort of look at what you need to set up your own studio. And how long do you think that's going to be?
I hope to get that accomplished as soon as possible. It doesn't look too complicated, and I think it's quite feasible, and that is our goal, is to be able to broadcast live and answer questions and take calls and try to put a little bit more of liveliness into it. The tapes are fine and fun to do, and it's easy to choreograph and to make good shows that way, but there's something missing if you don't go live, I think.
Yeah, I think you need to do that. There's nothing better. You watch old live television shows and listen to old live radio shows. They're magic. You can always tell a taped broadcast. And when I play reruns, even though the rerun was recorded live, it still sounds like it's on tape. Isn't that strange?
Yeah, there's something. It's when you're making your tapes and sitting there by yourself and making a recording, you often wonder if you're actually going crazy or talking to yourself.
Your show is really good. I'm really pleased with it. I like it a lot. I listen to it every night, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
And I was really pleased when I heard you talking about The Quest for Truth, and you named your show The Quest for Health, and I remembered the conference you'd attended where I gave a long lecture on the quest for truth and what it meant to me and what it was all about and all of that kind of stuff. And apparently, you were the only one listening. Or at least you're the only one that I found evidence that was listening. Out of the realm of Michelle Moore, that is, because she demands that of her people, and of course she is following the quest for the truth. Tell us, in your first broadcast, you gave a little bit of background and stuff like that, but tell us what really, what was the first indication in your life that you were going to be involved in plants and natural healing and nutrition and things like that? Because I know that most of us don't start out on the path that we end up on. And it just sort of happens along the way somehow. How did it happen with you?
Well, actually, I do a show, upcoming show on that very reason or that very fact. It's how did I decide to become a clinical herbalist and a professional herbalist and to actually start to work with so many people. I've always been interested in plants and always found myself drawn to the natural world and always wanted to learn more about plant medicines and edible foods. And there was, to give a brief...
Wait a minute. What's an edible food?
An edible food. something you don't find in your grocery store. No, but edible plants, rather.
I know what you mean.
Right.
They don't know what you mean.
Exactly.
Okay.
You're
absolutely right. There's a lot of food in the grocery store which is not edible that end up on the dinner table every night.
Yeah, sometimes we don't have no choice in that matter. It's really hard to constantly be dedicated and observant and diligent in obtaining the best food. Some people ask me if I'm a vegetarian or what I eat. I basically try to tell people that it's really important to strive to eat as clean as food as possible, clean food, unpolluted food, food that hasn't been tortured and overprocessed and obliterated and totally taken down to something that's not even worth eating. Basically, clean food, whether it's vegetarian or meat,
mm-hmm.
is really something to strive for. But to answer your question, I do a show where I talk about. I went hunting one time. And I was actually bow hunting for deer and ended up not going bow hunting because I fell asleep under a tree. And ended up hiking and had an encounter with a black bear in the forests of the Southwest here. And for a long time, the bear and I were about 15, 20 feet away, and we sort of spent some time together, actually looking at one another, and the bear kept moaning and groaning, and I kind of moaned and groaned back to it. And eventually, we parted ways, and I went back to hiking and got to the top of the ridge and lay down and went to sleep, and just to catch up on some rest, because I've been hunting since very early in the morning before sunrise, and I had dreams, and I had a feeling, and in the dream, the bear, as the Native Americans would call it, the bear medicine, actually spoke and presented ideas and information and showed me this gift about medicinal plants and this whole world. And it's really hard to try to describe. A lot of times we get inspirations from dreams or ideas, and to not really dwell into it too, not to try to find too much significance in it. This encounter with the bear was so powerful that it somehow stimulated dreaming about plants, and I realized that I had always had this natural gift with plant medicines, and now that this was the thing that I could do the best and the way I could reach the most people. And it showed me that that this gift with plant medicines was what I could do best on the quest, and it was like my contribution. And that dream really gave me my purpose and my goal in life. And when I woke up, I ended up naming my first herb store Bear Creek Herbs because of this whole encounter with the bear and the dreams that I had.
Wow. When I was a little boy, I had a terrible encounter with a giant tarantula. And I had a dream that night, and it taught me to stay away from spiders. But anyway, obviously the encounter with the bear made a deep impression in your mind, and that's probably why the bear was in your dream. What you were probably dreaming about was a natural thing that you were interested in all along, but these two things coming together was significant for you.
A catalyst. There was no doubt that being 20 feet away from a bear, I would put an arrow onto my string and pull it back, and I was deciding whether to actually take the bear's life and to be in that realm and to be hunting a bear. And I would put the arrow back into the quiver, and I did this several times, and I realized that there was something more taking place here than just hunting the bear.
Yeah, if you shot him in the wrong place, he would have got really mad.
Yeah, I mean, 15, 20 feet away, you know, it's hard to get off two shots in that short period of time with a bow and arrow. And the bear would be on top of you, especially since we were both visible looking at each other. And there was something unusual about the whole thing, and I really decided that it wasn't about hunting at that point in time. And I laid the bow down, and like I said, we were 15, 20 feet away, and we just sort of talked to each other. It would moan, the bear would moan, I would mimic the sound, because I've always done that I've always been a little different when it comes to plants and animals. I try to spend time observing and looking at animals, and actually as a kid, I try to mimic the sounds of wild animals all the time to see if I could get them to respond. So this encounter with the bear was a continuation of things I've been doing my whole life anyways, and mm-hmm. I didn't realize how significant it was, so I realized that we were only 15, 20 feet away, and that it was powerful, and you're probably right, it was a catalyst to...
Well, it takes an awful lot of courage to stand there 15 feet from a wild, huge animal in the forest, and actually have the presence of mind to mimic the bear and notch an arrow and pull it back, and then decide, no, you're not going to do that, and then decide maybe you will and try it again, and then decide do not, and not panic or do something foolish shows a great presence of mind and a lot of courage.
Yeah, I don't know, but maybe a little bit of courage, a little bit of presence, and a little bit of understanding that knowing that the bear is just scared, that we kind of were forced to meet at the bottom of the canyon, because I came down one side, the bear came down the other, and boom, there we were together. And I think the bear was early morning, and the bear was probably going somewhere to sleep. And I really think it was, we were both startled, both surprised, and we both realized that we could kind of just look at each other and then turn around and go our ways, and that was that. So I don't know about courage, because at the time, an understanding, a more of an understanding with animals and the natural world. I'm very comfortable in that. I've had encounters with alligators and rattlesnakes and bears and water moccasins and a lot of creatures that people would be truly frightened of. And I think their fear comes from a lack of understanding of the natural world, a lack of understanding, and a lack of willingness to understand. The fear is just there because they know nothing else. And I did know something else. I kind of felt that I wanted to be there with the bear, and I wanted to be that close. And maybe because I'd never done it, and I'd always... There was actually a hunting group in the 1800s, a famous small group of men who took hunting to the ultimate level. They would hunt with guns, and they would hunt with bows, and hunt with spears, and eventually they moved down into hunting with knives. And they would literally hide in trees or hide behind rocks and try to jump on the backs of a deer or a mountain lion or a bear and literally take hunting to that highest art form of just two creatures with a minimal amount of tools hunting each other. So I can't remember where I read that, but it was a short story maybe out of one of the Harpers of the 1800s. But it was a small group of men who actually hunted with knives, and I never really wanted to do that, but I realized you could actually get very close to animals.
I think that group became extinct, and
they did, actually.
And no one carried that tradition on. Well, tonight your broadcast is on liver therapy and milk thistle. Milk thistle is that, I don't want to cover this a lot because it's going to be in the next hour, but milk thistle, is that particular to liver problems?
It's probably one of the most important herbs to know about in general. Milk thistle is a liver protectant herb. It's actually the most important thing that milk thistle does is stimulate the production of new liver cells when liver cells have been damaged by the liver.
Okay, well, let's not get too much into it, because then it's going to spoil the next hour, and I certainly don't want to do that.
It's extremely important to know about.
The reason I ask is because Gary Bourgeois called me about, I called him. He called me before?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't call me. I called him.
Okay.
I called Gary Bourgeois, and he said that he wanted to get a hold of you and talk to you because he wanted to find out about milk thistle, and because he has... You know, he's just getting over a major illness. I mean, he was that close to death. And he's pretty healthy now, but he's still having some problems. He can't drink liquids because of some problems with his liver. He doesn't process liquids. They just store up in his body, and he blows up like a balloon. But he wanted to talk to you, and I said, well, tonight's broadcast is on liver and liver therapy, and so he'll probably talk about it, and it turns out that you're going to, so that's good. So, Gary Bourgeois, listen to the next hour, and if you have any questions, you can call my house after the next hour and talk to Michael Cottingham personally. And you'll like him, and he'll help you out any way he can. So, ladies and gentlemen, I've got to tell you that we're already feeling the effects of the counterterrorism bill. They are now investigating thousands of people across this country, me included, as domestic terrorists. Can you believe that? Anybody who has said anything against the New World Order or talks about being in support of the Constitution for the United States of America, calls themselves a patriot, is a member of a militia, or has been outspoken as a patriot leader, or has criticized the government or government programs or legislation in any way, shape, or form is now under investigation as domestic terrorists. Here in Phoenix, in the state of Arizona, it's being conducted by an FBI squad known as Squad 5. And the other day I told him not to call me anymore. Don't call me, don't talk to me, don't come around. You're nothing but a pack of lying, stinking, scumbag traitors. You can't be trusted. And Oklahoma City Day 1 proves it. Waco proves it. What happened up in Montana proves it. Ladies and gentlemen, Ruby Ridge proves it. An FBI sniper shot in the head and killed dead Vicky Weaver, an unarmed woman holding her 8-month-old daughter to her breast. And now they've got the audacity, the guts, the extreme arrogance to say that the men and women who have always stood solidly behind the Constitution for the United States of America, have always been willing to go off and fight America's wars, have always been willing to, and countless hundreds of thousands have already died in defense of freedom, they have the audacity to call us domestic terrorists because we have the audacity to question their destruction of the Constitution and the freedom of all Americans and all peoples. Don't let them get your goat. Don't let them intimidate you. Do not let them instill fear in you. Stand up to them. Tell them to go fly a kite. And don't tell them anything else about you or anybody else. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget to stay tuned for Quest for Help with Michael Cottingham. And God bless each and every single one of you. The book Oklahoma City Day One has made them angry. It has made them fearful. It has made them panic. They're in deep trouble, ladies and gentlemen. When you read this book, you'll know why. This is the voice of freedom. Thank you. This is the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen, for Quest for Health with Michael Cottingham. And on Monday night, beginning at 6 Pacific, 7 Mountain, 8 Central, and 9 Eastern, Jackie Patru will debut with her new show, We Hope.